Hello and welcome to The Sun Will Rise. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. Today we're going to talk about Israeli Hasbara, in other words, how the Zionist entity disseminates its propaganda and misinformation across the world. We're doing this in the light of repeated attempts by Israeli politicians and media to conflate the terrorist group ISIL with the resistance group Hamas, and by extension, Palestinians. Recently, Palestinian Christians have condemned ISIL's crimes, mourning the slaughter of 21 Egyptian cops in Libya. Moreover, Palestinians refuse to accept the label of extremists that Israel tries to impose on them through its Hasbara. On today's show, we'll ask, what's Israel's real goal in tarring Palestinians as ISIL? And we'll discuss just how effective Israeli Hasbara is and what pro-Palestinians are doing to counter it. But first, here's a report from Gaza on how Palestinians themselves view Israel's smear tactics.
Palestinian factions have condemned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's attempts to tar the image of Palestinian resistance groups by equating them to ISIL. Netanyahu has had a record of equalizing Hamas and ISIL, both on Twitter and during his speeches. ISIL is seen as Israel's key ally in hampering the creation of a Palestinian state, as seen by Netanyahu spreading propaganda, conflating ISIL with Palestinians.
ISIL has no presence amongst us and we have no relation with such groups. Netanyahu is trying to cover up Israeli crimes by branding Palestinians as terrorists. Palestinians have a legitimate right to resistance and to liberate their land.
The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, said that a group like ISIL only serves the interests of Israel.
Netanyahu is using ISIL to scare the world and to give Israel the green light to commit more crimes against Palestinians. George W. Bush used the same tactic by comparing Palestinian resistance to terrorism on 9/11.
An analyst said that ISIL, also known as Daesh in Arabic, shares the same principles with Israel.
There is no relationship whatsoever between Hamas and Daesh. Actually, Israel is a Daeshite state, simply because the principles and the ideologies and the practices which Israel doing against the Palestinian people, against the whole world, is more Daeshite than any part of the world.
Palestinians have boldly expressed their condemnation of ISIL's crimes after the cold-blooded murder of 21 Egyptian cops in Libya by holding a candle-lit march in Jerusalem, Al-Quds.
Palestinians are united against ISIL crimes. Attempts by Netanyahu or any other Israeli leader to tar the image of the Palestinian resistance who fought fierce battles against Israeli forces during the recent Israeli war on Gaza are bound to fail. Ashraf Shannon, The Sun Will Rise, Gaza.
To discuss the issue of Israeli Hasbara or propaganda, we have two guests in the studio with us today. Imran Shah is a political blogger specializing in social media, and Hassan Al-Khatib is a documentary filmmaker and TV presenter. Hassan was on the Viva Palestina aid convoy from London to Gaza in 2010, after which he made a documentary called Viva Palestina. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in today. Hassan, if I could start with you. So let's get this out of the way. So there's this equation with that the Israelis are making between ISIL and Hamas. Not true, right?
Well, not true, of course, but not to be surprised. And they're going to continue to be doing this, as they have done in the past, by conflating anyone who opposes Israel with being, you know, really extreme terrorist. They've done this with, you know, Hamas and Al-Qaeda before. They're doing it now with Hamas and ISIL. To be honest with you, there is a small presence of people who are sympathetic, or even people who have gone and joined ISIL inside the Gaza Strip, but they are a small minority, something which Hamas has nothing to do with.
I'll ask you about that in a bit depth later on, but in terms of even their religious ideology, you know, I mean, Hamas springs from the Muslim Brotherhood kind of thinking, doesn't it?
Of course.
Originally.
Of course.
ISIL, Salafi jihadi, even, I mean, there's so many religious and methodological differences between these two groups, isn't there?
Of course, in fact, when it comes to, you know, their approach in the Middle East, you can see there's a huge gulf. Hamas is pretty much a resistance group against Israel. That's what they've been ever since their inception. Whereas ISIL, what we've been seeing, what they've been doing over the past few years is pretty much attacking other Muslim countries and other Muslim groups. So there is a huge gulf and a huge divide between these two.
But nevertheless, Netanyahu keeps repeating this. Some people are going to believe him, aren't they?
Well, I mean, only the very, very gullible and people who can't really distinguish between these different Islamic movements and different Islamic groups will probably won't be able to see through these lies. But I think the normal political commentators are in the know that this is obviously just another lie. This is just another, conflation of issues. He's trying to make Hamas look even worse than it is. And this is something I think a lot of people who may disagree with him, but they're not really going to challenge him on this.
Sure. Imran, obviously you specialise in social media. I mean, Israel must surely know that this is a lie, right? But are they working off the principle that if you repeat a lie enough, people are going to believe it?
Or? Certainly. I mean, it came out in the Al Jazeera reports that in the intelligence leaks from South Africa that Iran doesn't have any capability to build a nuclear bomb, yet Netanyahu across the whole world is repeating these lines that Iran is an existential threat to the world, especially on nuclear terms. So we know essentially what Netanyahu is doing is just peddling a lie constantly in order to try and galvanize a narrative that has no basis on reality whatsoever.
Yeah.
And this is something that we see in Hasbara. We see that to be the case. And this is the interesting thing. On social media, on Twitter, it basically is the epitome of an informed public. So if you were to see what an informed public would act like, Twitter is probably the best example.
Really?
Yeah, I would definitely...
Sometimes you get crazy people on Twitter, though, don't you, as well?
Yeah, well, that always happens in the general populace. You always have fringes of all sorts of type of people. But what's most interesting, especially when there is an onslaught of Gaza, there's always, and that's when the Hezbollah are in full flow, there's always an organic international mass of people that are out there countering their narratives and their falsehoods and so on. And it's quite remarkable that when we hear people say that Hasbara has some clout, it's not entirely the case at all.
Right.
In fact, they're quite wasted on social media.
It is being countered, but ultimately it is an organised, well-funded system, isn't it, this Hasbara?
Despite the institutionalised order of Hasbara, it has absolutely no impact whatsoever on the social masses of social media.
You think so?
Very much so. However, what they do also is peddle Islamophobia. So the same Hasbara accounts that peddle a pro-Israeli narrative, a pro-Zionist narrative, they also peddle Islamophobia. And that is not surprising because we have the same Islamophobic groups that peddle the same Zionist pro-Israeli narrative as well.
Yeah.
And that is something that's not counted so effectively.
Really?
Because the informed public are not well informed as to how exactly to counter this narrative. When it comes to the Palestinian issue, we know all the facts, we know all the arguments.
Yeah.
And the question may arise, why exactly would an Israeli state sponsor Islamophobia? Why would they do that?
And it's essentially I'll ask you that in a few minutes' time, so hold that thought. As usual, we like to showcase your views and comments on our social media pages. So here's Camelia Shabayati with what you've been saying about Israeli Hasbara and other Palestine-related issues.
Hello and welcome to this week's Social Media Roundup. Now, Israel has been notorious for their systematic policy of propaganda, otherwise known as Hasbara, to rationalise their injustices in a glamorous way. Fortunately, people are responding to their aggressive social media presence. Let's take a look at a few Facebook comments. Hadi from the UK says, Netanyahu is famous for being a diabolical liar. The threat of the terrorist Israeli regime is clear and must be stopped by all responsible world leaders. Meanwhile, Ahmad from Palestine thinks Israel will get what's coming to them. He says, the Zionist paranoia will result with their inevitable destruction. I hope to see this happen one day. And people on Twitter have caught on to Israeli tricks too. Esther from the US tweeted, comparing Hamas to ISIL is the most ridiculous thing I've ever come across on Twitter. Israel needs to stop spreading misinformation. Moving on now to something more refreshing, the artist Banksy has unveiled a new series of artwork on the streets and walls of Gaza. more than just art, is to remind the world of Israel's carnage during their 50-day offensive on Gaza that killed more than 2,000 Palestinians. And each piece of graffiti has a symbolic meaning. For example, the cartoon cat amongst the rubble represents how we are distracted from major injustices with trivial things. And finally, campaigners at the SOAS University in London are celebrating a big victory for the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement after a referendum to endorse an academic boycott of Israel passed by a landslide. The results showed that an overwhelming 73% of more than 2,000 voters backed the boycott. And that's all the social media news I have for you. Please do follow our Facebook and Twitter accounts for more news on Palestine.
Hassan, I want to pick up on something that our Palestinian interlocutors have been telling us. A lot of them seem to be equating ISIL and Israel, if not being direct allies, but indirect allies, in the terms of ISIL kind of serves Israeli interests. Would you go along with that?
Or? Very much so. In fact, the former NATO General Secretary, Wesley Clark, said in a media interview that ISIL was created by his allies, by America's allies, to destroy Hezbollah. So, of course, that's the underlying agenda behind ISIL. Then it's of no surprise that Israel and ISIL go hand in hand with the agenda in the Middle East.
But one thing we can all agree on is that it does distract us from the core issue, which used to be the core issue in Arab politics, and that was the Palestinian issue.
Yes, of course.
That's
part and parcel of their, you know, underlying agenda, which is to distract the Muslims and the Arabs from focusing on fighting Israel to focusing on fighting Hezbollah, Iran and the other resistance groups.
I mean, I was going to ask you about something you said earlier on about the penetration of ISIL within Palestinian society. You said it was minute, but we have seen it as a phenomenon in other Arab countries, yes, even in the West. Is there any prospect that it might mushroom into something bigger?
There doesn't seem to be any prospect like that because it's, you know, there's a lot of, if you like, opinion against ISIL right now in Gaza and across the Arab and Muslim world. So they're really losing support. They're not going to gain any support. And of course, as you're seeing in Iraq and Syria at the moment, a lot of people who may have been sympathetic towards ISIL before are right now absolutely against them and are fighting them. So this is what we're seeing. It's actually something against ISIL.
Imran, getting back to the Hasbara stuff, practically, how do we go about countering this?
I guess the main reason is that essentially we have a situation where the pro-Palestinian narratives are so widespread that any people that are on social media are able to counter easily. However, we have a situation where the same Zionist establishment and the same Zionist people in Europe are peddling narratives of Islamophobia. And what the core, one of the main core objectives of the Islamophobic industry is to erode any sort of sympathy with Muslims, with Arabs, and also the Palestinians as well. So we have this situation where Zionists will promote actively the Islamophobic agenda in order to try and counter the growing pro-Palestinian agenda in Europe. And that's really sort of sinister, but it's also showing that they're really scared, because we're now seeing a situation where the pro-Palestinian movement is penetrating the political spheres.
Is it? Yeah. In the West?
Well, yeah, because we see a number of countries that are now even entertaining the prospect of recognising Palestine, and they have done successfully. And even though that is tokenistic and symbolic, it is still very significant given
the, right direction,
given
yeah.
the massive machinery that the Zionists have.
But Imran, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you express some positive thoughts about social media, which I think many people will agree with.
Yeah.
But over the mainstream media, over the big Western channels, CNN, BBC, Sky News, whatever, the Zionist lobby seems to still have a hold over them, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, that's partly because, and I think mainly due to the pro-Palestinian movement not able to evolve, as it were, to be able to organise itself financially and also in terms of manpower to get in these spheres and lobby effectively, whether it be media, politics, or elsewhere. And even though the organicness of the pro-Palestinian movement is very essential and very powerful, those focused objectives of being able to lobby the media and get people to present that narrative in mainstream media is very scarce still.
We need to get our act together. Yeah. Do you want to just come back on that?
Yes, I think ultimately America right now is the biggest superpower. And if you look at American politicians and American media, it's much, far worse than what's happening in Europe. You've got, Zionists in top positions in the media in America. They have political action committees that tell, congressmen that they will take you down if you do not support Israel. Mm. So in America, it's far worse. And the kind of lobbying or even for that, the pressure against the Zionists is far less. If you try to attack Israel in America, it's not the same thing if you do so in Europe. Europe is slightly coming to terms with being more pro-Palestinian, but in America it's a much, much bigger uphill struggle.
Okay. All right, well, we're going to conclude this discussion in a few minutes' time, but for the moment we are going to move on. As regular viewers will know, we really do our best here to cover the Palestinian stories that the mainstream media ignores. So here's a quick roundup of what's been happening in Palestine.
During the open Shuhada street protests, Israeli forces opened fire at a group of Palestinian children who were dancing as a form of protest in front of the Shuhada checkpoint in Hebron al-Khalil. The children were performing a traditional Palestinian dance called Dabka, but had to flee after Israeli soldiers fired tear gas and threw stun grenades at them. Palestinians are no strangers to being refugees, and the crisis in Iraq has led to a new exodus for some. 18 Palestinian families fleeing ISIL have taken refuge in the Baharka internally displaced persons camp on the outskirts of Erbil. Some of the Palestinian families have been displaced over 5 times during the past few decades. Most recently, these families fled their homes when ISIL took over their villages. Thousands of Hamas supporters rallied in Khan Yunis and Gaza City recently to protest Egypt's decision to label the political party as a, quote, terrorist organization. Demonstrators carried banners reading, "Hamas is not a terrorist group, and the resistance defends the dignity and freedom of nations." A senior Hamas leader, Ismail Radwan, told demonstrators that the decision by an Egyptian court is a, quote, service to the Israeli occupation that does not represent the will of the Egyptian people. And finally, Palestinians celebrated the opening of the Bethlehem Museum for Culture and Heritage, which preserves around 3,000 exquisite artifacts. The museum took more than 30 years to be inaugurated, and it is a recognizable achievement. The Ministry of Tourism insists that the museum will help the tourists know more about Palestinian history.
Hassan, I suppose a pretty good example of Israeli Zionist diaspora was the speech that Netanyahu gave to Congress on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I mean, he was mainly talking about Iran. I don't want to particularly get into Iran because it's not the topic of this show. He talked about Hamas a lot. But what I noticed also, I mean, first of all, give me your thoughts on that speech.
Well, of course, it was a speech designed primarily to get the Americans prioritise their agenda against Iran, to not let them, to allow them to have any deals with Iran. But there was a few underlying issues with this particular speech, and that was some of the lies that he came out with. He tried to say, for instance, Iran is going to be a huge threat to Israel's existence, Jews around the world and everything else. But you see, this is the part of Israeli propaganda that I think we really need to focus on. The fact that they have been lying over and over again, even before they even came to a creation, they've been lying to the Jewish people about coming here, this is your homeland, no one else is in this particular, in Palestine. And they've been continuing that lying, of lying, of demonizing, tarnishing their opponents, whoever they may be. So I think this is part of, one of the biggest parts of Israeli propaganda is to twist the truth, because they feel it will gain them more support. But I think in the future, more and more people will actually see through these lies and it will go against them.
Imran, I'm not sure whether you saw the speech on Tuesday, but would you characterise it as Islamophobic as well, some of the stuff that he was saying?
Most certainly. And the one of the ways in which you can really see that is Islamophobic is because he tries to lump certain Muslims together that have a very vast diversity. So Iran has a lot of difference with ISIL, has a lot of difference with Hamas, and also these groups have a lot of differences with various other Muslims across the whole world. However, to be able to tar them as jihadists, Islamists, the same sort of propaganda words we see in Islamophobia in Europe, is essentially Islamophobic. And the point of this is essentially, as I said before, to erode any sort of sympathy you have with Muslims and Arabs. But also, you have to really understand that to demonize Muslims in such a way is to try and depoliticize and pacify the Muslim public. And so as a political Muslim who is most likely to be pro-Palestinian, you are seen in the eyes of the Zionist entity as simply as a dirty Islamist and nothing else. And that's why they try to paint you, no matter what kind of Muslim you are, as some kind of moderate version of ISIS.
Yeah. I mean, I must have noticed, I noticed myself on social media following that speech, there was obviously lots of Zionist supporters ready to do their tweets, ready to support what Netanyahu was saying. And as soon as he started speaking, they bombarded the social media space with that. And it took the pro-Palestinian activists a little bit of time to catch up. So we are lagging behind a little bit, aren't we, in our professionalism, in our organisation?
I mean, when it comes to sort of really, and you have to sort of see that it's minor. When you see sort of minor instances like that, an institutional organised approach can really sort of swamp the airwaves. However, when it comes to actual real events, when it starts coming out in the press, that's when more the general public start really seeing the situation and they start to be able to counter it. Yeah. So we do see that surge of pro-Israeli narrative, but very quickly you start seeing pro-Palestinian activists on social media are very easily countering it. And this speech shouldn't really be seen as nothing major because it's just him appearing at the Congress, which he does every year anyway. Yeah.
And by the way, this speech also goes to show the kind of power and control and influence that the Israelis have over Congress and America. So in any way, it actually damaged their reputation even more and built into this narrative that they are the ones who are, you know, pretty much controlling America's Western foreign policy in the Middle East.
And ultimately, I mean, you know, Arabs and Muslims and even kind of pro-Palestinians, whatever, we've had our differences over the last few years, haven't we? But ultimately, these are issues that we can unite around. And maybe just kind of just to end on that thought.
Well, this is the thing. When you look at, for instance, Jewish organisations and lobby groups, Jewish Zionist lobby groups, there are hundreds of them, and they have so many differences, political, religious, social differences amongst them. But when it comes to Israel, they all unite. And I think that's something that Muslims have to also learn from, and Arabs, that when we all have our differences, whether it be political, social, or religious, but when it comes to Palestine, this is something that unites all Muslims, apart from the very, very extreme ones. But this is something I think we should all stand together and be on a common platform.
Palestine and Islamophobia.
Exactly.
Very easy
These
issues
two
to
very
around.
Important issues.
Imran, I was going to ask you a question, but we're out of time.
Definitely.
So thanks a lot for coming in, guys, today. That is all the time we have for today. Once more, thank you to all our guests, and don't forget to get busy on social media telling us of what you think of the issues raised in this programme. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time for more discussion and analysis on Palestine. Bye-bye.